Welcome to Hadar's Web, a podcast featuring community conversations on spirituality, healing, justice, and art. My name is Hadar Cohen. I am your host, and I am delighted to invite you to my relational web. Today's guest is Nadia Gilbert. Nadia is a Palestinian-American artist working at the intersection of spirit, culinary production, experience design, and filmmaking. Her multidisciplinary work invites us to dive deep, transform our relationships, and engage with the vision of interconnected collective liberation. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Great to meet you.
Yeah, well, you know, there's so much that I want to ask you, and I'm really excited for this conversation because when I came across your Instagram, I felt such a deep resonance. And, you know, sometimes there's people who speak the right words and you agree with the words, but then there's people who speak from a deeper level of knowing, from a more spiritual place, from a more integrated place. And that's really what I felt when I was listening to you. I was like, wow, this person really is speaking from a deep layer. So I just wanted to start by asking you how you are in this moment, especially as a Palestinian woman, as someone who has been using her platform, who has been speaking about politics, who has been integrating a more spiritual lens, talking about collective liberation. How are you holding up?
Thank you for asking. I'm well in this moment. I think the thing that has been permeating my experience is this extreme of polarities right now. It's like the extreme pain and grief and sorrow is on the other side, not balanced, but there's the exact same level of intense hope and joy and positivity, in the sense that I'm finding myself in spaces and with people that feel so aligned, and opportunities to speak with and be with and organize with people really holding that higher vision. And that's really what it's keeping me going. And also that sort of dancing between the polarities of both those things, but not sinking too deep into either one where I forget the other, feels like it's kind of the importance of the mission of the time, and like, you know, really preparing us for what is going to continue to be a difficult, challenging, and a polarizing time, only increasingly so.
Yeah, definitely. And there is, right, that gift in polarization that really makes us all clarify our truth. And, you know, what is our truth? And, you know, how can we find people who are resonating with our truth and speaking truth, right? So there's also kind of an unveiling that certainly I feel like we've been in this collective reckoning in. So I want to ask you a little bit about how you've been holding. You know, I think this is such a big conversation around the intersections of political activism and spiritual work. And I think you do that so, so beautifully. And I wanted to just ask you to share a little bit more about what this political work means to you, how you see that integrating with spiritual work. And what is it like holding the two together?
Yeah, you know, I think the truth is that these things are deeply interconnected, and it's only going to become more so and more clearly that way as things progress. And we really cannot separate them. I think what many people are seeing and are feeling and have been experiencing for the past 6 months is, you know, let's talk specifically about people in spiritual spaces. There's so much disconnection and so much focus on the individual, the individual's experience, the individual's desires and manifestations, that's really very disembodied and very disconnected from the truth of what it means to be a human on this planet right now. And, you know, to me, our spiritual life and practice is meant to be the thing that centers us and holds us so that we can show up in the world in right action, and so that we can be sharper and more intuitive with what is present and able to actually act on those things that come to us, the ideas, the ways of organizing, the ways of showing up in the world, and strengthen us so that we can face those challenges from a really grounded and centered place. And, you know, I have friends in kind of who work in kind of both spaces, and it's becoming increasingly needed for those two to become intertwined. You know, many people who are activists, you know, for the longest time, the activist space has not had a lot of space for people to take care of themselves. And a lot of, you know, people who put their bodies on the line and who protest and who, you know, participate in direct action, their you know, trauma from that experience is often overlooked, and they need that care. They need that empowered and grounded practice and space to care for themselves so they can keep doing that work. And people who are, you know, spiritual facilitators or leaders are increasingly realizing that they cannot just be in this space of, you know, really bypassing what's present in the world and just being in and with spirit, because it's actually directly connected to everything else that's happening. And I think more so we're seeing how those things can intertwine together. And for me, it's evolving. You know, I'm really just trying to show up moment to moment in full integrity and full truth, and challenge myself to stretch in the ways that I'm being asked to stretch, and not be afraid of that, but take that as an invitation that I'm meant to participate in.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I agree with you. You know, I think sometimes, especially in the new age, kind of Western spiritual world, there's all these terms that people use. They're like, oh, well, we all want peace, or we all want unity, or we all want love. But then they're like so scared of just even listening to a Palestinian person speak and just the incongruity there, where it's just like, well, how are we going to have peace if people can't even speak about their experience, if that's so triggering for people to even hear about? So I wanted to ask a bit about your activism for Palestine. And I guess I'm curious, like, were you always outspoken around your identity and your, you know, your activism, or was that a journey that kind of unfolded? I know that so many people have so many different processes around this, but curious to hear more about your Palestinian identity and how you like grew into speaking up so much about it.
Yeah, well, thank you. I grew up very lucky and very blessed to be really proud of who I am and proud of my family and where we come from. My mom never, you know, I know a lot of Arab Americans grew up with this experience of kind of needing to, you know, fully assimilate and hide that part of themselves, especially in post 9/11 America. But I really had a very strong sense of who we are and, you know, the truth and the heart of who we are as a people and what we deserve and what we can give this world. And so I have always felt this deep sense of responsibility with where I've been placed, where I grew up, and, you know, being far from home or far from my ancestral lands is something that causes pain and sorrow, but it's also clearly for a reason. Like, there's a strength in that too. And what is the strength I can find? What communities can I tap into? Who can I speak to because of my mixed heritage and because of my background? And I've always felt very empowered to speak about that, because there's never been kind of a question in my mind of our values and of the truth. And I have certainly spoken up about it online a lot in the past, but it's really only, it's come in waves that people are actually interested in hearing and caring and engaging with it. And, you know, there's like this pattern every May when the Nakba comes, that there's a lot of people talking about Palestine and people talking about, you know, our stories and their family's stories. But then, you know, the attention on it has dwindled. And of course, now we find in the last 6 months, it's like a spotlight has been shown on this part of the world. And so many people who have avoided engaging with this or learning about it at all, are listening. And so I feel emboldened by that to use that attention to really connect with people and really be a part of helping them grapple with it and understand it and actually realize it's their business and it has always been their business.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. I think so often people have been like, oh, okay, well, that's so far away. That has nothing to do with me. But actually realizing, I mean, this is so the heart of colonial struggle that really implicates the whole globe, you know? And there's all the, it's like, I'm all the time learning of like, there's all these connections, right? And especially with the Israeli state and how it was like meddling with other countries as well. And you know, also, of course, what Palestine means to so many oppressed groups throughout the world. So it for sure is a global struggle. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about what are some of, you know, the positive experiences you've had with people kind of coming to you in the last 6 months and actually listening to your story and listening to your truth. And what have been also some of the challenges there?
Yeah, you know, I there's been both, of course. You know, the polarities are very strong. I have had a number of very close friends of mine and people who I love who have taken a great interest and care in learning and who now speak about it from an empowered place of deep understanding and deep empathy, and who you know, several people who have come and appreciated me for speaking in a way that resonates with them or that helped them articulate something that they didn't feel they could articulate. And that's always just the greatest reward to be able to, you know, to touch someone's heart and help them, because ultimately we're trying to create a resonance here that expands outward and that supports all people who are curious and open and know that there's more here for them too to engage with. And of course, I've also had people not in my like closest circles, but in my sort of adjacent social circles that I've had to fully boundary from, and who have really just drunk the Kool-Aid so much and are so deep in their wounds and their narratives that I've boundaried my home, I've boundaried my social energy because I feel it's so important, especially when you're holding space for people and doing this work, and engaging in conversations that may be, you know, redundant for you, but really helpful for the other person. It's important to be aware of our energy levels and like where it's best to put it. And yeah, I've had some interactions, some confrontations with people in public who have, you know, who have really not liked what I've said, who it's triggered them very deeply, things that I've said. And you know, the one time that I can think of that happened, my only response was to just kind of listen and let them say whatever they wanted to say. And then I put my hand on my heart and I told them, thanks and have a good night. And that was it. I wasn't gonna debate them back and forth. I was not gonna engage in whatever this thing was that they wanted us to have. I was just gonna see them with my heart and listen and be like, okay, that's where you're at. That's fine. That's that, and I think sometimes that's the best thing we can do because this debating energy is just, it's not helpful. It doesn't, it's like, no, we're both trying to win, and I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, definitely. And having that discernment of like when to walk away, when to put the boundary. And also as you were speaking, right, it's like when to notice that when the conversation is becoming disembodied, right? And what's the return path to the body? And I think, you know, you're also a Reiki healer, no?
Yes, yeah, I was trained in Reiki to a Reiki master level, and so it's something I don't talk about a lot necessarily, but it is a big part of my own practice and my work.
Yeah, because you're very attuned to energy and, you know, embodied somatic practices. And I feel for me that I found that that has been so foundational actually in political work is also learning that discernment because Otherwise, sometimes Reddit can just turn into like, well, people are just saying words, and sometimes it's the right word, sometimes there's the wrong words, but we don't have a deeper attunement to, well, what's the body language communicating? How is the truth held in the body? What are the ways of being? What is this person's actions, right? Which to me are sometimes more important, right? Well, like just what the person is saying. So yeah, I mean, I love that you're a Reiki healer, and I think that that's so beautiful and so needed in this time. And I want to ask you, this is maybe such a big question, but this intersection of right healing work and Palestinian identity and Palestinian healing. And, you know, I think it's even such a hard question because in the middle of this genocide, it's like there's still so much suffering and so much oppression. But I also believe that it's so important to put the energy also into the healing and the transformation. And I'm curious what Palestinian healing looks like for you, or what that means to you, especially, right, not kind of coming from that spiritual, new agey Western place, but what does it look like to actually root it in Palestinian lineage and tradition?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you asked that because it's been really alive for me recently. As you know, I'm sure many of us have felt, I've been feeling a great deal of anger and a lot of rage. Especially, I think sadness can sometimes be easier to navigate because maybe it's a bit more accessible or a bit more obvious in these spiritual lenses that like sitting with and honoring and loving your sadness is important. But with my anger particularly, I have felt like, you know, I think the way we talk about anger is it's something to be, you know, gotten rid of. It's something to, you know, purge out in some way and like find an outlet for. And while I have outlets that allow me to engage with my anger, particularly around using my body, you know, moving my body physically, really, really helps with that. I recently had this kind of key or this kind of clarity that maybe for Palestinians, you know, I'll speak particularly, maybe we're not supposed to heal all the anger and heal the pain. Maybe we're not supposed to heal it in the sense that we clear it and it's gone. Maybe actually we're meant to integrate it and hold it and use that as a fuel and as a teacher to actually medicinally help us to show up in the world and be part of healing in a sense that is more integrative than clearing. And that's been kind of a framework that's been helping me when I felt like I needed to, you know, I need to get rid of this anger in me. Like, I'm gonna have to go and like do something to get it out. I actually don't need to get it out at all. Like, I want it here with me because it's a great teacher and it has something for me here. And so when I think about, you know, healing for the Palestinians beyond the physical changes in this world that will liberate us and allow us to, you know, live freely and live with honor on this planet, I think it's also about integrating all of that pain into our experience in a way that, you know, we can carry it with us, but it's not weighing us down. It's actually a very strong part of us. And that's now how I'm really approaching the sort of healing path.
Yeah, that's really profound, right? The difference between clearing versus integrating. And just the word resilience comes up for me as you were speaking, right? It's like, because clearing, and as you know, I live in Los Angeles, so sometimes that happens in the spiritual community, right? Where there's an experience and it's like, okay, let's just like get it out of our system as fast as possible. But actually, what does it look like to deepen into that experience so that it does transform you and make you stronger and make you more resilient and make you also more connected to other humans, right? Because pain and suffering can also be a very deep way of understanding other humans, right? If we're not connected to our own pain, it's very hard to understand someone else's pain. But then, of course, we don't want to get so wrapped into our pain that we can't make that connection. You also are an artist and working with food and design and filmmaking. And I really resonate because I'm so multiple also. But I want to hear a little bit more about your projects, what you're working on. What does it look like to find that artistic expression? And really also, what is it like to be so multiple, right? Do you feel like sometimes you have to like choose one way, or is it just all of it is informing each other?
Totally. That was a journey for me for sure. My career, my work life started in the film industry, and I served as a DP for several years, working on short narrative projects, some documentary projects, and just like really loved the teamwork of working with a camera team and being behind the camera and that sort of creative expression. And food really came in sort of as an accident, as something that was at a time that I was really struggling in a lot of ways, bringing me a lot of joy, connection, remembrance, and also connection to the people around me. And I hesitated to really go for it professionally and put myself out there as somebody who was doing culinary work for a long time, because I had these sort of stories in my head that my film peers would think that I failed as a DP, and that's why now I'm doing food things. And it took some time, but really releasing those stories and allowing myself to embrace that actually it's such a strength that I'm multidisciplinary and I'm not scattered. I'm actually very consistent, and the reason I can do lots of things and be in a leadership position in lots of places is because I'm really good at it and I love to do it, and really just embracing that. And embracing as well, as you said, that the all of these things inform each other, and the through line between all of my modes of expression are the through line is me. The through line is it's coming through me. And, for anyone who's a multidisciplinary person who has many avenues of interest and of serving the world, I think it's really important, to remember and embrace that the through line here is you, and that you are coming through all of these channels, and you are your resonance is consistent between all of the things that you do. And so when I really embraced that, that was when things really started to shift and change for me in my work, because I love working in many different spheres, and I love the creative expression of gathering people through food. I love the creative expression of working with a team to produce a piece of media. And these are things that are just inherent to who I am. And the more I embraced them and embraced that sort of multiplicity, the truer my life felt. And I think that's something that anyone who's multidisciplinary should really recognize is actually a strength, and not, societally, like you not having one unified single thing that you do is not it's not a deficiency. It's actually a strength, and you should embrace it.
Yeah, I definitely needed to hear that. Because, yeah, I mean, I think there's also so much in, I had a similar process, right? Because I used to think of myself as being very scattered. It's like artists, spirituality, politics, like, and feeling stretched. But it is really true what you're saying, that the through line is actually, right, me. Like, I'm the common denominator in all of these. And I do feel that there's also kind of moving away from a more linear way of thinking about things, and also sometimes more masculine, right, into a more feminine wisdom that tends to be more circular, tends to be more multiple. And yeah, I think that there's such an evolution into that perspective. So I definitely see that. What are some current projects that you're working on that you want to share?
Sure. Well, I have a number of food activations that are in development right now, most of which are not publicly announced yet, but some things that will be open to the public for people to come and join. But really, The projects that I'm working on right now, particularly focused on some food events and some event series that I'd love to produce, are really centered around this idea of a sort of future Palestine or a future world where we're all liberated. And what does that actually feel like? And can we step into a space where we're imagining that? I do, I've done a lot of projects where I'm solely working on food or solely working on the media aspect, but I really want to integrate all these things to create spaces that are fully immersive and really imaginative, and also invite people to not just come and consume an experience, but come and participate in and contribute to the experience together, and sort of do that work together. And so, yeah, if people want to keep up with me, they can keep up with me. There's some things that are going to be coming out very soon, but there's a lot happening behind the scenes right now, both for the local New York community and globally, inshallah. But I'm feeling myself coming into a much greater integrated, embodied sort of way of working where all these things are starting to weave, which I love.
And I love that also having a somatic taste of free Palestine, right? And especially energetically and spiritually, right? Sometimes we actually have to pretend like it's here in order to bring it, right? To have that felt experience so that it's ingrained in us. And I'm curious to hear a little bit for you, what does free Palestine mean, and what might it feel like? And what is that kind of vision that keeps you so motivated and dedicated through all these projects?
Well, I think holding that higher vision is a responsibility that all of us hold if we believe ourselves to be leaders or engaged in this. And I think all of us are leaders in our own way. Leading doesn't need to necessarily mean you have like an audience or you're doing something beyond your immediate community. But I think that all of us have a responsibility to hold that higher vision of what is possible. And to me, that higher vision is one where our people are able to freely move on this earth and to love the places that they love and connect to be able to tend to the land that their ancestors are from and care for it, and to be able to express and love and share our culture and our heart with the world. Where there isn't a taboo around that, where it's actually celebrated, and that our uniqueness is celebrated just as everyone's uniqueness is. And to me, this issue really goes beyond just Palestine. I think that Palestine is a unique issue because it is it's really the single most taboo kind of subject that exists on this earth. It's this one subject that people have refused to touch for so long because they're so scared. And I think that that taboo means there's something there. There's something there that actually connects us to both sitting with the truth of the harms that have been caused and the pains and the ancestral pains that have been caused across communities of people. And really feeling that and being with that. But then also, that can allow us to actually feel into those truths within ourselves and those parts of ourselves that we are not engaging with, that actually have a great deal of power underneath them as well. And so, this feels like a sort of step for people to begin doing that work. Like, start with the taboo thing. And, I really believe that all of us at some point will come to awaken to and be present with what's here and start to do the work we need to do to unravel our stories and unravel our wounds so that we can show up.
And there's definitely, right, so much fear for people, and that's the fear is often what's keeping people from really seeing clearly what's going on. And the fear also in the narrative, right, the way that the narrative is positioned and the fear mongering and all of that. And to me also, right, like the spiritual work is to really not let fear dictate, our understandings of reality. And of course, it's easier said than done, but it is sometimes so difficult to see how fear really just takes over someone's mind that they just cannot see anymore. And you know, it's also interesting as you were speaking a lot in the beginning about polarities, you know, because I think this is also something that it is really hard for me to sometimes reconcile, where it's like, on the one hand, there's so much global support for Palestinians in a way that there's probably never been, right, till this day. And so many communities are turning up, so many people are unlearning, so many people are listening and reading books and showing up to the protests and all of that. And at the same time, right, it's like government systems, I mean, especially right where we are, US, like, are just so committed to like a colonial imperialistic structure. And it's sometimes it's really hard to right, like reckon with. It's like, okay, the people and the governments and how does this actually right come into a space of political shift in our world? Even though right, like communally, I feel like we are in some ways feeling that, right? We are feeling some shifts that are happening. And yeah, I think just the difficulty that sometimes it's like, well, when is this actually going to translate into a full-on material reality?
Yeah, I mean that's the challenge. It's like while we as individuals, the majority of us do not have the ability to take the hand of the person causing harm and take it off the weapon and stop them from what they're doing. We do have our communities and our voices and our bodies and our ways of expressing. And that is, you know, if we can't stop it from happening physically, then we have a responsibility to engage with it and participate in it, you know, and hold that higher vision, even as things get really dark and bleak and painful. And this is the challenge, is that I think truthfully, we are not going to see relief anytime soon. This is a process that the world is in, and the world is shifting, both slowly and very rapidly. And we cannot sink into despair because it's not changing at the speed that we wish it would. We have to keep holding that higher vision, and that's like a muscle to stretch and keep on doing. As really like our job, like it's our job to do that. And that's not, you know, that's not rose-colored glasses. I think that's really just truth. I think that's really just truth of if you believe in humanity and if you believe that people inherently at the core in their soul are pure, then it must be so, and it must change, and change is happening. And so, you know, really holding that vision as a consistent practice is so important for anybody doing any kind of activist work, and leadership, because people are going to, as they continue to learn and as people continue to sort of have reckonings right now, we need those who are holding a vision to kind of be there to stitch people back up and help facilitate continuing to hold all of this. Because we'll all be stronger for it, and we'll actually be able to create a better world and listen for what that right next action is.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, it reminds me of during the Egyptian Revolution, there's an activist who said that, you know, sometimes we can't change the material conditions and, you know, but what we can do is shift the consciousness of the people, and eventually that consciousness will shift the material. And yeah, just thinking about what you're speaking as also right consciousness work, right? I was like, okay, you're bringing people together. We're creating spaces where things can happen. Think people can finally like feel certain things that maybe they're afraid to feel, and that right that actually ends up having an impact. But yeah, also that time warp where it's like slow and fast at the same time, right? A lot of kind of the dualities together, and yeah.
Yeah, and I mean the consciousness shift is slow and rapid, and also, you know, the actions that we can take in the moment become clear to us when we're really present with the present moment, when we're actually attending to it. I think that there is a way that everybody can show up to this and everybody can stretch their muscles to be a part of change in this world. And it doesn't look the same for every single person, but it is accessible and available to every single person if they're listening. You will know what you're meant to do. You will know who you're meant to talk to show up to, where you're supposed to go, who you're supposed to organize. And if you're engaging with that and you're being actually present, you will hear those blips and those keys, and it will be on you to stretch the muscle of actually following those things and not letting the fear take over before you let yourself start.
Yeah. So I'm curious also to hear a little bit more about what your spiritual practice is these days. And you spoke a lot about the importance of listening, and maybe as kind of a gift of wisdom for folks listening, like, yeah, what does it look like for you to listen? Like, how do you know when you're listening? What is that act of listening like?
Yeah, I was very blessed to be raised with really strong faith. I was raised with Islam. My family is Muslim, and I was raised with an Islam that is really has been a deep source of peace for me my entire life. Like, my relationship to God and my relationship to Islam has been such a place of peace and a relationship that I've really, cultivated and made stronger over the past, 10 years when I've been an adult. And, you go through these journeys of connection to God and connection to spirit and disconnection. But for me today, it looks like really believing that my life is an act of devotion, and how am I showing up to a devotional life and having a daily practice of moving my body, of meditating, and sometimes simply sitting with silence. And when I think about and talk about listening, one sort of meditative practice that has just really been helping me and also helped others in some spaces I facilitated. I used to do a morning prayer at the very beginning of this every single morning, and then it was very difficult for me to show up on Instagram Live at 7:30 every morning, and so it's more occasional now. But all we would do is sit in silence for 20 minutes and attend to what's emerging and just approach the present moment with kindness and grace, and creating a sort of consistency with a practice like that has been very, it's very simple, but it's also very profound. When you set an amount of time and all you're meant to do in that time is be attentive, and be available, open and available. And I'm now in a place where I really, my big practice is really trying to bring that awareness and presence into every moment of my life as a spiritual practice, and really having that seed to return to, and that stillness and that silence to return to within myself, where I know that the truth lies, and creating pockets of time intended for that silence is, I think, especially important right now, because there is so much noise and so much influence. And when it comes down to it, when we sit in silence and we're attentive to what's here, you don't have to think about what is true or what is right. You just feel it, and you build a relationship to that feeling.
Yeah. That's a beautiful answer. Yeah, and truth can really only come from the inside, right? It can never be imposed. We can never find someone else's words or ways of beings and put it on us. Like, we always have to do that inner journey of finding where it lives inside. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you want to talk about or you want to share?
Can't think of anything. Like, so I'm just kind of open right now. Yeah, I think what I feel is important for all people listening here or not listening here is in this moment and in this moment in time and what we're witnessing, we need to empower ourselves to know that we can speak and use our voice and empower ourselves to share our hearts with people and share how things make us feel at the very baseline. And to know that that's actually a strength, and that vulnerability and that willingness to share parts of ourselves is a huge strength, and it's something that our planet really, really needs right now, because it's moving from that place and stepping into a room and being in that space that allows change to start to happen. And we need to be in deep, loving relationship with ourselves and our histories to be able to do that. And that takes practice. And I think we all have the capacity to do that one day at a time.
Amen. Yeah,
Amen.
I love that. I mean, that's right. The true spiritual teachings are accessible to anyone, anywhere, at any given time, right? That's, to me, the wisdom of God is that God is available to all who seek, to all who desire, right? Like, there's no, I need to be of that identity, or I need to be in that institution. Like, they are here for everyone. So thank you so much for sharing so much of your heart and so much of your wisdom. You just spoke so eloquently and with so much precision about each question. And yeah, I'm really moved and really touched by how you speak and just the work that you do, and definitely want to stay tuned to some of your creations that you are engaging in and creating. So thank you so much for coming. And if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This has been lovely. You can find me on Instagram. That's the easiest way to keep up with me and what I'm up to. I'm at Nadia Diaspora, should come up. And yeah, that's where you can keep up with future things going on. I teach virtual workshops sometimes and classes, and I have events going on in New York and other places, and I always announce them on there. So if you want to keep up with me, you can find me there.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.